We're going to do the
arrangements.
Please.
Right, thank you. I'm going to lead through the discussion on this. I'll just say at the outset, I'm going to suggest a modified recommendation when we get to the end. I've had a lot of feedback about this paper because it's raised quite a few issues. I want to just step back and give you a little bit of context and then just walk through in a slightly different way what the paper's saying. Right, the first thing is that IFRS 11, joint arrangements, really doesn't tell you anything at all about accounting other than to point you to other standards. The joint arrangement standard IFRS 11 is mainly about classifying investments. It tells you whether you've got a joint venture, a joint operation, or just simply some sort of other investment. In just about every circumstance within that standard, it then says you need to account for your investment, either in the case of a joint venture, it is specific, it says your equity investment in accordance with, and then points you to IAS 28, the equity method. In the case of a joint operation where you have direct interests, it simply tells you that you need to account for those rights or obligations in accordance with other IFRSs. So it's not specific at all. It doesn't say this is a lease or this is what you need to do. Now, as a result of that, it's quite silent on lots of issues. And I think what's happened here is that we've had a request from a national standards setter to look at the separate financial statements. And they're making a presumption in here that the right accounting for a joint operation is to do something called proportionate consolidation or an elimination process. And it's interesting when you read a standard, you can almost say, where does it say I cannot do that, or where does it say I have to do that? And I think IFRS 11 is a clear case. Because we don't specify the actual accounting requirements, we have a little bit of uncertainty that's actually emerged. So the request that came through has asked that in the situation where you have a joint operator, or you've got two partners entering into an arrangement together, and you don't have to go into details, and what I don't want this to deteriorate into is lots of fact patterns and little scenarios, is that they have an investment, and we classify it as a joint operation, but it happens to be housed within a legal entity, okay, something like a company. So national standards setters requested that what the separate financial statements should show is simply deal with that as if it's an equity investment, and to account for that either at cost or fair value, or as we've just decided to change or propose changing, using the equity method. And that's all you'd show in the separate financial statements. And then in the consolidated financial statements, you would show all of the underlying assets and liabilities that you've got access to because of your agreements. What this paper 12 is setting out to demonstrate is that would be a very dangerous step to take, because that would be ignoring in the separate financial statements very specific contracts. And the nice thing about joint operations is it's a bit of a circularity. In order for it to be a joint operation, you must have very clear rights and responsibilities, in other words, clear assets and liabilities. And separate financial statements ignoring that would be a fundamental switch for us in terms of our accounting. And I use the example of a wholly owned subsidiary to demonstrate that conundrum, that problem. However, what it has highlighted is that in the consolidated financial statements, I think many people outside are treating a joint operation as a proportionate consolidation. And what they're doing is eliminating their investments. In other words, they're ignoring the fact they have equity instruments and doing an elimination. What I've suggested in the paper is that that's not the appropriate treatment, that because the joint operation is not part of a group, you still have to show your shares, and then you show your separate rights and obligations. Now, because there is such a big difference in thinking with that, I'm not going to recommend that we go ahead, as I've suggested in here, and make a change immediately. I think we need to do a bit more thinking and work. I want to make one very important point to me anyway. It sounds like we've got a huge difference between what people might be thinking in terms of proportionate consolidation and what I've suggested you do is that you continue to account for your equity instrument and the underlying assets and liabilities. But the extent of that problem depends on at least two things. One is how big this pool of entities is. In the basis for conclusions in IFRS 11, we made it quite clear. We thought this was a very rare or unusual situation where you would actually have a joint operation inside an entity. It is by no means normal. It's the exception. So we anticipate the pool will be quite small. The second thing is, we don't have, unfortunately, examples post IFRS 11 of how these things have been set up. If it was me, and I was purely treating the company as an operating shell in a sense, I might have shares, but I might, you know, there might be penny shares. I wouldn't have real equity in there. So you'd end up with, empirically, almost identical answers anyway. The only time this becomes a problem is when you have equity, like shares, that matter. In other words, their material component. Otherwise, you might, by coincidence, get the same answers. So I think what we need to do, what I'd open it up and say, one is get some feedback on the analysis, and secondly, recommendation. But my recommendation is that we do some additional consultation, both with the national stand setters and with the major accounting firms. We already have one meeting scheduled for mid-October to try and get their feedback on this paper and the approach in here, and B, try to identify a bit more in terms of actual examples so we can understand how big the problem actually is. The other thing we also need to do is that in parallel, you know, Michael's team with the Interpretations Committee is doing work on this as well, and we don't want the left hand and right hand going in slightly different direction. So we want to try and involve the Interpretations Committee as well to get their feedback on this, to see whether or not we actually need to make some slight modifications to IFRS 11 to clarify it. And if we are going to clarify it, we either have to do, as I've suggested, to clarify that it's the equity instrument and then the underlying assets and liabilities, or you clarify that it's a proportionate consolidation and then deal with the consequence of either. So perhaps open it up there.
I have a general comment. And different from the previous issue, the business information under common control was an old project, once listed in our agenda. And there are researches by the AFRAG, by the other groups. And this one you just mentioned, I think we must have the strategic policy debate first. That is, you know, we just published standards. It starts to be implemented. Should we discuss the related issues now or wait a few years later to think about during the post-implementation review process? And I'm not sure what is my basic ideas, but my position will be lenient to not tackle now and wait for post-implementation review. Otherwise, you know, we will have always very busy schedule. You see, new standards come out, we miss something, and restart projects and tackle minor or medium-sized issue again. It will be an endless journey. And this is why I said we must have, firstly, the general policy discussion first, rather than particularly related to this project.
Yes, maybe on the same note, I think that here we are faced with a difficulty, which is accounting in the separate financial statements. And we know we have a whole series of problems, and our standards do not work very well when applied to separate financial statements. Whether it is urgent to take care of that or not, I'm not sure. I'm not convinced there is urgency to do it, or to do it only for this topic. I would rather have a broader look at how to apply IFRS in separate financial statements. There is an assertion in this paper which I think is questionable when you say in 19 that accounting for a party's interest in a joint operation differs from proportionate consolidation. Yes and no. In reality, what you do, you pick up your share of the assets and liabilities. I don't see a very big difference with proportionate consolidation, to be honest. There might be some minor differences, but basically it's the same. So if on top of that you have an entity which is under this common control, it's a joint operation, and which is a legal entity in which you have equity, so in the books of the joint venture, of the joint operator, you have an amount of equity investment, I don't think you can have twice the accounting. You cannot have double accounting. You cannot have both the investment and then the share of the underlying assets and liabilities. You have to choose which one you book. If you book your share of assets and liabilities, then probably the investment has to go away and be replaced. You cannot add twice the same thing. In French, I would say you cannot have the butter and the money of the butter. So I think it's a matter of deciding actually how proportion this one. Accounting for joint operations is that in effect following the rules of proportional consolidation, although we may claim it's not proportional consolidation. I think that's a basic point we have to decide. And I would say yes, it should. Where this becomes extremely complicated is when the fact pattern when you add intra-group contracts. And then, yes, you may have twice to account because you have your share of the rights and obligations plus your own share, your own proportion, your own interest in that specific contract with a joint operation. And here, and only here, you may have some form of double counting because you are accounting for two different things.
Just quickly to two things in there. One is the proportion consolidation versus joint operations. One of the issues that's come to us from the firms is they're struggling with those situations where you might have three parties with 30% investment each, but one of them takes 40% of the outputs, and so they've got a disproportionate share of some of the assets or revenue streams or something, and they're struggling. I would argue it's because they're using proportionate consolidation, that's where you get this mismatch. But if you account for each one separately, I think the accounting works, but we don't have any examples to illustrate that, and that's what we need to build as well.
Again, this is a specific fact pattern which makes it more complicated. Let's assume I have 40% of the assets, but actually I have a right to 50% of the profit. What I will book probably is 40% of the assets plus a right for 10% of the residual, which is not captured through my 40% of the assets. It's a kind of having an option. It's a form of option accounting or whatever, a residual interest, if you wish. That makes, but it's not counting twice the same thing. Yeah. You are counting different things.
Can I ask a follow-up question on this double counting question? If we make the adjustment that we talked about in May to permit the equity method, then in the scenario where you have other contracts, in determining net income of the joint operation, you would account for those contracts, right? The effects of, for example, a lease arrangement. That would affect the determination of net income of the JV. You'd pick up your interest. Would you then also account for those contracts as you're recommending here a second time?
Well, you end up, you take the case of the lease, you're going to end up with your investment in that entity, you're going to end up with your lease asset, your lease liability. And then in the equity method, because of course you get the expense, you get the revenue going down from the lease, you get the depreciation and so on, they're all offset. So over the life of the asset, and this is a simple example, one asset life, over the life, you're going to end up with zero profit anyway. But there may be slight timing differences in the short term. And again, that would just mean that with equity method, you'd be going up and down slightly. It should still balance. But again, examples help.
Yeah.
And examples based on real types of cases as well.
All right.
Michael, did you want to come in?
I did just make a couple of comments, and Anna and I spoke about this before the meeting. There are alternative readings of IFRS 11. So, you know, the paper 12 sets out one reading. There is another reading that certainly I would subscribe to, which is that paragraphs 20 and 21 of IFRS 11 say that when you've got a joint operation, it tells you what to do. It tells you to account for your share of the assets, your share of the liabilities. And I would contrast that with the guidance about how to account for a joint venture, which says you do equity accounting. So, you know, I wouldn't see that you would continue to account for your shares in the company because I think IFRS 11 tells you instead to account for your shares of the assets and liabilities.
Okay. I think Michael said what I wanted to say is that I think the issue, and I completely agree with Alan's recommendation to the board not to jump to the conclusion on this paper, as I think that's very fair. If you house a joint operation in a corporate structure, okay, there are potentials the way this is being described, or some reading of this can be a structuring opportunity, because under the current leasing literature, if you have an operating lease, you have nothing on your balance sheet. So you can push this down to a structure wherein you can get the accounting you want without a liability being shown. I think further analysis is needed to make sure, because I feel even if it's a corporate structure, me speaking, if there's a corporate structure, still if it's a joint operation, for me, I pierce through the veil. And that's how I see it, because it's a joint operation. So overrides that and say, just because it's housed in a corporate structure, for me, it doesn't matter. I pierce through that veil and say, hey, what assets and liabilities do I have? I think that would be a more accurate reflection rather than doing it in another way. So I think it's fair to debate this, but get some feedback is the eminent way to go about. And a couple of examples, especially with existing leasing literature, how does this look?
Larry? Going back to Wigwell's comments about how does this kind of bypass some of the agenda consultation to get onto our agenda as a practice issue to address, to give it priority to address this, especially when the standard is relatively new. I assume that it came to us because it was a request from a national standard setter that was directed to the board requesting a reconsideration of an amendment that relates to our other project on investment entities. The board's reaction seems to be that it wasn't inadvertent that we did not, that we omitted joint operations from the amendment we proposed for separate financial statements, and the initial discussion here doesn't identify a desire to pursue that. So is it now time for us to, in some ways, maybe pass this to the Interpretations Committee and ask them to take the lead on working through what some examples of are, how they think it would, the standard as it is written today would work for a couple of real-life examples, and on the basis of that, what they think should be done, and whether it's an amendment, a clarifying amendment, or an amendment to a project, or an interpretive project, rather than us just going ahead and taking the lead on this because the question came to us.
The question came to us, and it could have gone to the Interpretations Committee. Was the initial request was for a change in the accounting. So that would be quite clear, particularly the separate financial statements, that it ought to be changed. It's a second-order issue about whether or not you should keep the equity method, equity instruments, or do a proportionate consolidation in the separate financial statements. That would be more interpretive. So because these things are combined, we thought it was cleaner and easier to bring it back straight up to the board, particularly given that we have had the issue. We were developing education material to try and deal with some of these issues, and we got feedback that we were being too interpretive. So we thought we'd take a more cautious approach by coming to the board first and giving them an opportunity.
I think it was worth coming to the board first, especially given the project that we have on, but given the first round of discussion here, it does suggest to me maybe saying, how do we think this standard works today for a couple of real-life examples, and does working through those examples raise any issues that need to be addressed?
Where, does that need to be done through the Interpretations Committee, or can the staff get on and do that?
Well, I think the staff would do the legwork either way. I would imagine the Interpretations Committee would probably be a pretty good and hopefully efficient way of vetting the staff's thinking.
Well, they're dealing with some 5+11 and joint operation and equity method and IS 28 issues at the same time, and I think we at least need to keep them involved. So they, even if they see papers that we present here, that would work.
So the way forward, Alan, if you want to recap.
Okay, so the recap is, what I'm hearing is that, well, I haven't heard any, no, I'll take a risk and say, there's going to be some disagreement, I think, some slightly different interpretations about what IFRS 11 says. And I take it that people agree that there are two potential ways you could approach IFRS 11 in terms of the consolidated financial statements. And for us to progress that, we should do more outreach and find out the extent and the types of transactions that are involved, and then potentially bring that back to both the ISB, but also part of our consultation could be with the Interpretations Committee so we come back with a more informed approach.
Okay, just test my understanding of what was the staff recommendation. In a way, what you were proposing in 29 and 30 was to say, in separate financial statements, just disregard IFRS 11. Forget it.
That's what the National Standards Centre asked us to do. The recommendation was to clarify that you must account for that, you, as well as the separate contracts as you have for a wholly owned subsidiary, you must account for your equity as well. That was the. If it doesn't say that, then it's a badly good
recommendation. It says, use this opportunity when you do equity accounting in IAS 27 to do it also for your interest in an entity that houses a joint operation. That is, do equity accounting, don't do IFRS 11. That's what there is.
It should be both. Oh. At the moment, IFRS 11 is silent again about what you own, what the accounting
That's
is.
That's what it says. It doesn't say do both. It says do equity accounting.
For the for that, that for that instrument you hold. So if you've got shares in a company, you equity account that plus your contracts.
What they said, butter on the money of the butter, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is what we have for wholly owned subsidiaries.
Right, I say no.
But that's wholly owned subsidiary accounting.
Alan?
No. When you're a subsidiary, you do you account for your investment in your subsidiary, full stop. You don't account for the assets on top of that.
So if you
have a contract with you. If you have a contract, you have two things. Wait a minute, you have two things. Yeah, you have a contract and an interest. Here, I'm starting with a simple situation. You have just an interest in a joint operation, right? If you have a contract, that's something else, okay? But just start with a simple one. You want to count it twice or only once?
I'm not sure if you can just have a simple interest in a joint operation because to make it a joint operation, you'd have to have those specific contracts that give you those rights as well. So you do have two things.
It's a management contract. It's not a financial interest contract, just management agreement.
This is where the examples are going to really
help. I think some examples will help because you've just opened the pool much wider than I anticipated the joint operations were supposed to be.
I think there's one more complicating factor to the separate financial statements. And that's whether the joint operation is in a subsidiary to begin with. And the subsidiary is accounted for either at cost, fair value, or under the equity method under our proposal. So it depends on where the joint operation is sitting to some extent, does it not? Whether this is an issue at all?
It should not be. That's my point. My point is it should not be just because it's housed in a different thing. It's a silo. It's a siloed accounting.
It should just follow all the way up.
Yeah.
If the subsidiary directly owned the asset, it wouldn't be shown in the separate financial statements of the parent. So why, if it owns that asset through a joint operation housed in the subsidiary, should it show up as a separate asset in the separate financial statements? I think that that whether or not it's sitting in a subsidiary, that it itself would be accounted for if it didn't have a joint operation. I think that complicates the issue.
I push back a little bit and say, if it is housed in a subsidiary as a joint operation, I don't know how joint operation by definition is not a subsidiary. So I don't know how that is
done.
Let's say
it's an operating subsidiary that has other operations and assets and liabilities.
Who wants a joint operation assets? Subsidiary or the parent?
The subsidiary is the one that is the joint operator.
Then the subsidiary's separate financial statements will have it, and the parent's separate financial statements will not have it, and that's the right answer.
Yep, that's right. That's the right answer.
Otherwise, if you have a subsidiary, you will not have a joint operation. You can't have both.
But it depends. I think when we talk about what's in the separate financial statements, we have to be very clear about whose separate financial statements we're talking about.
Yeah, I think I'm clear, but the corporate structure does not. The issue here is that two joint operators form a corporation and put in $100 of equity, let's say simplicity's sake. That entity goes and borrows $900 worth of liability and buys that $1,000 worth of asset. So it's books tally, 100 equity, 900 liability, $1,000 asset. They immediately turn around and give it as a lease to both the parties. If I follow the corporate structure, hey, that's an operating lease. I don't need to put it on the balance sheet, not the liability. But truly, the guarantees are given by the joint operators and it doesn't get reflected. So I can get around the leasing, existing literature, not the future literature, by doing this. So that's a fear I have, the way this paper is reading, to say that by housing it in a corporate structure, you can avoid some of the unsavory answers.
We're talking about two different corporate structures, though.
So, specifically then, why don't I recommend that we take this to the Interpretations Committee, the papers expressed essentially with perhaps a supplementary paper in November, and then once we've got more information from our outreach, we'll come back to the board and report on where we ought to go with that. Is that fair?
Yeah.
There's one concern. If we do that, we are delaying that narrow scope amendment we agreed to many months ago.
Yes.
And we can separate that. That's the one to allow equity method in the parent-only financial statements, which is the South American request. And if you would like, that's my only concern with extending this is we delay that one.
Why do we delay that?
Well, if it takes us another 3 or 4 months to get to a position where we expose, that's 3 or 4 months worth more. What do you?
Why is this one related to that one as opposed to related to all the other joint operation questions that should be packaged together?
Yeah. I think that the parent-only equity method and the parent-only is a separate issue, but it's related to this only because of the national standard setter request. So you could separate this out.
Yeah, but it could be an IAS 27 amendment, not an IFRS 11 amendment. So it may be optimal to link that, you know, make an amendment for that with the one which has already been in process. So, package it, yes.
So what is the conclusion?
Separate them out. And put this with the rest of
the
go ahead with the Latin American one and then have this one to see with the other IFRS 11 issues.
And the problems of our Italian firms?
We will be consulting with them as part of this. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I'm there tomorrow.
Get a man of action.
Buona fortuna.
I have a paper at IFAS tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much.